Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Good to have you with us, everybody. Happy October 1st. We're turning those pages on the calendar, and it seems like at a faster rate than ever before. Good to have you be a part of the broadcast. I want to say thank you so much for telling others about the broadcast. And as we are having just a surge in listenership, thank you so much. It's a real privilege to have the honor to bring to you this broadcast each and every week. And more listeners are, more and more mortgage professionals are making this a regular part of their way of digesting all that's going on in the information highway out there. Again, we're not trying to break news. There's so many wonderful publications that do it. Janet Hewitt does an outstanding job. If you don't get the Mortgage Banking Magazine, you've got to get that. That's one of those ones where she has got so much content that is just spot on for the right time. I don't know what she, how clairvoyant she is, what crystal ball, whatever she method she does use, but she nails it when it comes to finding out what needs to be on and or in that magazine. You need to be getting it. That's one. But here, what we do here on this broadcast, for those of you that are new to the broadcast, we digest and discuss, bring comment to what is in the news, and then really bring that to everyone's attention. That's why I think our broadcast is so unique. We don't necessarily report the news. We comment on the news. We bring perspective to it. And so many people say that's what's so valuable to us, Dave, is what the fact that you bring on the professionals that you do onto this broadcast to share with us things that are going on, discuss it. Today we've got a real special guest, one of my favorite guests that we have on. He's just so smart. He's so brilliant when it comes to talking about the economy, what's going on. But he's also one of the most entertaining speakers. His name is Jay Brinkman. He's the chief economist for the MBA. I just enjoy Jay at a personal level, at a professional level, at an intellectual level. He just challenges every brain cell I've got, and I just can't wait to have you hear what he has to say later. We're going to be talking about the MBA's recommendations for the future government role in the core secondary mortgage market. It's a paper that if you listeners are not aware of, you need to go to the MBA website, download this white paper. I believe it's best identified as a white paper, and read it. It's important that you understand this. That's what we're going to spend the bulk of this broadcast on. We're going to expand the Hot Topic segment. Alice is off, and we miss her. Wish her well there in England, jolly old England, as she's traveling around there on vacation, and much deserved. But without further ado, though, let's get into the rates, what's going on with the market conditions. Joe Farr, good to have you on the broadcast.
Morning, Dave.
What is going on today?
Well, the MBS prices are up today. They're up about 11:30 seconds.
Really?
Hard to find anything other than just more of the same going on. There was a little weakness coming out of the Asian markets over the weekend. And in the U.S., construction spending was a little weak, but the ISM index was a little stronger than expected, but stock market's up a little bit off its highs for the day, but up 100 points or so, and MBS prices are up too. So, you know, both markets up.
Yeah, so the whole market's up. We're here attending the Merit Catalyst event in Austin, Texas, and we just got we had to leave the session a little early. Was listening to Kyle Bass talk about the economy, where the markets are going. He was just talking, Joe, about Asia. Specifically, what some of the dynamics are going on there. An interesting data point on Japan. Jay is going to get a chuckle out of this. Do you know in Japan they're selling more adult diapers than baby diapers? It's a data point. You find it funny, but it's a data point on the aging population and what that has as an economic impact on that country. It's really interesting. Now, when did you think? Now, Jay Brinkman, I know you're listening to this, so we have to come up with a new MBA index. It's called the diaper index. So I don't know where we're at in this country, but let's go in before we get into the diaper too far. Let's talk about last week, Joe. It was another good week for mortgage rates.
Just like the week before and the week before that.
It's like reporting the weather in San Diego. Yeah, more of the same.
That's right, more of the same. Last week we climbed to new highs. Now we ended the week with a couple down days, but on the week it was still a new high, and can't ask for much more than that. The MBS prices are being driven by, you know, the Fed demand, obviously, but there's also a bit of slowing growth in the U.S. and certainly globally. There's been recognition of some slowing growth. And then concerns in Europe continue to affect the market. In the U.S., we saw durable orders fall more than expected. And the second quarter GDP, you know, by this third measure, you don't see big swings. But second quarter GDP was revised from 1.7 to 1.3%, which is a big drop.
That is a big drop.
During the week last week, pending home sales fell, which kind of changed a trend. We'd been seeing very nice improvements in the housing data up until that. New home sales were lower than expected, so we'll see what that leads to. And then last week, Chicago's PMI fell to the lowest level in 3 years. So none of the U.S. data was terribly positive last week, but negative data is good for mortgage rates.
Yeah.
And then in Europe, we saw Spain release a budget that included a good bit of cost-cutting, austerity measures, and it was met with riots in the street. So the politicians' ability to follow through with that kind of stuff really came into focus last week, and we'll see how that plays out. And then in Greece, even, there's an effort to determine if they're complying with the covenants of the funds that Greece has received,
and
they've put that effort off for whatever reason. They're not going to even try to determine if they're in compliance until after the U.S. elections. So,
it's interesting what's getting delayed around the world, out of respect for the upcoming presidential election. It's just really
cool. I wonder about that.
Yeah. Very. So let's talk about this week. What do we have going on this week? It's fairly light.
Not a lot of economic data to be announced in the U.S. this week, but what we have is fairly important. We got the FOMC minutes from the last meeting, which, as we all remember, was the bombshell meeting where they announced QE3 and extended guidance out to low rates for a longer period of time and QE3 until we don't need it anymore. So it'd be hard to imagine much new coming out of the minutes, but we thought that about the meeting before, and those minutes really moved the market in the middle of August. So just be aware they're coming out at 2:00 on Thursday. And then obviously the most important event of the week is going to be the jobs report on Friday, 8:30 Eastern time Friday. Consensus calls for 120,000 jobs, which is not very much, but
no.
And the unemployment rate to stay at 8.1%.
So we'll be really those could be significant movers, Joe.
They have been lately.
Sure have been. So, I mean, we take a look at where that's going to happen. If they're off, you know, we'll see rates low.
The last time the jobs report was announced preceded by a week or so the Fed meeting, and so. The announcement in September for August jobs was much weaker than expected, and it had a very exaggerated impact on MBS prices to the better because of its influence on the Fed meeting. And as we saw, the Fed did act to announce QE3. So it'd be hard to imagine that kind of benefit in the mortgage market coming out of this next jobs report. I mean, the Fed's done what they can do.
The Feds have done everything they've done. They've got everything in the kitchen sink thrown into this thing. So maybe Jay will shed some light on what else they might be able to do. We'll get some comment on that. Joe, thanks so much. One thing I keep telling everybody is the listeners out there, when the market does move adjust, it moves quickly. You need a service like MBS QuoteLine to be able to be staying on top of it. Again, one of the things I appreciate most about their service is the fact that they give it to you in short bullet points. It's easy to digest when you're in the midst of your busy, hectic time. So if you want to learn more to sign up and how to use this service, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quoteland delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Did you get that number? 646-716-4972. Get other people listening to this broadcast. Pass it around. It's important. Especially, we discuss some of the things we have later. In just a little bit, we're going to have Jay Brinkman on talking about the MBA proposal or their recommendations about the federal government being involved in housing, the importance of it, the historical significance of it. You need to be sending this around. It's not too late. Email your associates. Get it out there. Get more people listening to it. Also, you can go to lickinonlending.com, L-Y-K-K-E-N, onlending.com, to be able to learn more. We appreciate you being a part of the broadcast, telling others about it. As we get there, we're going to bring Tony. We're going to mix up the order here a little bit. We're going to bring Tony Garitano on, who is Mr. Technology, telling us all that's going on. Tony, good to have you on the broadcast.
Good to be here with you, Dave. How's your
weekend?
Always
fun to have you on. I hear that Xerox just released a new survey where they asked lenders how they feel about compliance. You got any insights on what on that, how that survey went, Tony?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've been talking a lot about compliance on the broadcast for obvious reasons, and we've talked a little bit about how the presidential election is going to impact compliance going forward. But
yeah,
it's interesting to note that from the perspective of those lenders that use Blitzdocs, which is Xerox's electronic
right.
collaboration tool, they believe that the new compliance rules, whether it be UMDP or something related to Dodd-Frank or the CFPB, they believe that those regulatory rules and or requirements have prompted them to adopt technology at a quicker pace, number one, and number two, to innovate in terms of rethinking their process, which shocked me because that's
yeah.
contrary to what I would have thought. I also got off the phone with Kelly Purcell from eSign Systems this morning.
Right, yeah.
And she surveyed her lenders, and 25% of her lenders are actively using electronic disclosures.
Wow.
So that to me, you know, coupled with the Xerox information was very good news for the technology market anyway.
Yeah, it is. That study also talked a bit about the lender's attitude toward electronic mortgages and any changes that you see and that our listeners should know about and any change in the trends.
Well, you know, Dave, I mean, we've been talking about e-mortgages for what seems like forever.
Talk about something that doesn't seem to have gone much very far, but
and you know, my guess is that UMDP will push lenders in that direction a little bit faster than normal because they're already getting used to dealing with data. But the survey results were pretty dramatic. In 2011, 28% said that they believe that the mortgage industry will close more than half of all loans as an e-mortgage within the next 4 years.
Wow.
So keep that number in mind, Dave. 28% last year.
Wow.
How many people said that this year? 43%.
Really?
It's
so
almost doubled.
The perception that we're, as an industry, moving towards electronic mortgage is definitely growing in a consensus.
I mean, at least that's what there is an increasing recognition from the lending community
right.
that this is where we're going and that we're going to be there within the next 4 or 5 years. Now, whether or not that actually happens, you know, you and I know better.
Right.
But at least that's what the lending community thinks is going to happen, and that is a big change.
That is a big change. I think it's one of those things where you talk about something long enough, it actually takes on. Are we at the tipping point then, Tony? Are we really going to see this actually begin to happen?
My opinion, as I've expressed on the radio show throughout the past few months in particular, I am a very big proponent of UMDP. I believe that it's going to take the secondary market to demand a more electronic, data-driven process. Lenders have consistently told me, we will not do e-mortgages because my investor will not accept it. Well, now that the investors are starting to demand a more data-driven approach, and lenders are realizing that they can't keep up with compliance in a manual environment, I think we may very well be at a tipping point.
That's very interesting, Tony. Thank you so much for bringing each week some perspective from the technology world as we look at it. Certainly, it's an important data point that we continue to have in the perspective. Thank you so much for being a part of the broadcast, Tony.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
All right, we'll look forward to having you on next week, hearing more. Folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs. And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lincoln on Lending Show.
Good to have you back with us. Andy Schell, also known as the Profit Doctor. We've got many names for him, Yoda, all the Mortgage Yoda. I mean, we got so many nicknames because there's so much wisdom that comes out of him. He did a webinar, a campus webinar, campus MBA webinar last week. In fact, he's been doing it for the last 3 weeks. Interesting data points that came out of this. We as a radio program have been trying to alert lenders. They really need to make sure they look at their accounting to make sure the data's right. Well, Dave, we look at our accounting, Dave, and I get this regularly. Well, we feel pretty good. We feel pretty good about it. You better not be feeling good about it. You better know it's good, because the consequence is wrong financial data going into the call report, the NMLS call report, is going to land you a whole lot of problem. And here to talk about the webinar and the perspective, Andy Schell, good to have you on the broadcast.
Hey, Dave, always a pleasure to be here with you.
And it is always fun to be here, especially when we're sitting here side by side. I can look at each other and we can talk about it.
I can throw spitballs at you.
You talked last week, I mean, you talked after the last session about the three-session campus MBA webinar, and you said that you felt that 80% of the participants of the webinar got the content.
The first webinar we had was general overview of mortgage and flow of funds and the participants and basic accounting. And, yeah, a lot of people understood what we were talking about.
And by the way, what we're about ready to give you in statistics is we're not suggesting it's a sampling of the industry. Sampling absolutely of who those were that were on this webinar, and hopefully those that were there were the ones that wanted to learn.
And the scary part about that is that those who were there were the ones that wanted to learn, so the people that don't want to learn may not even know as much as they did. But we're not going to conclude
that. We're not going to go there. That's right. Statistically, it would be interesting to poll, and that's why we want to get the MBA more involved in, because I think that's something that's important. But let's go to the second webinar.
We may already be adversely selecting ourselves.
We may already be. But so let's go to the second webinar.
The second session is deeper into the weeds about mortgage accounting, loan-level accounting. This is the stuff you have to do if your NMLS call report is going to be right. You cannot have a correct NMLS call report unless you do these things in accounting, low-level accounting. But the good news is it also gets your branch profitability. And you want to know that. You want to know your profitability by originator, profitability by product. You want to know those things. But you can't do that without doing loan-level accounting. So session two, loan-level accounting, journal entries, it got kind of complicated. And at the end of the session, they poll, and 60% of the people understood what we were talking about. So that means 40% didn't, which means that 40% that didn't may not be doing the call report right. So that's a concern.
It's a concern. Again, we're not saying, everybody, listeners, that 40% of the industry doesn't get it. We're not saying that, but it's interesting. Well, obviously, you know, you like you said, we may be adversely selecting it, those that go to a campus MBA, because campus MBA does a great educational event.
That's what these are about. And they've been contacting us to ask questions, so that's they're on the path to get the solution for those that attended the session.
So the last session, let's talk about that.
The third session was on hedging and hedge accounting.
Now, that will make most people's eyes roll back in their head.
If you were to talk to mortgage bankers across the country with $1.5 million in net worth or more, which is becoming a lot of companies, and you ask them, are you doing pipeline hedging? And most of them are going to say yes.
Yes, yeah.
So that means they're hedging. Secondary marketing is out there working with a hedge advisor, doing pipeline hedging.
In-house, out-house, they're doing it.
Yeah, no more best efforts, forward sales, pair off, delivering a short-term mandatory. It's very simple stuff. And so it's simple stuff until you dive into it and really understand what's happening, and then you try to understand the accounting behind it.
So how many people polled afterwards got that?
Yeah, we taught the session deep into accounting, the FASBs that apply to it, how it works, how it flows, mark-to-market accounting, 159, how all that fits together. After the end of that session, we had maybe 40% understood.
Wow.
Maybe not even that much. So 60 to 65% of the people did not understand what we were talking about.
So we can anticipate you coming back with another webinar for Through Campus.
You know, we had to figure out, you know, it's like teaching calculus and chemistry to a high school class. Is that some of the kids just, it's hard. And you have to have the students you've got to have basic algebra before you can take calculus. And so if you have somebody that's only been a closer and now suddenly is a bookkeeper, and they throw them into this thing and teach them, they have to learn FASB 159. We teach CPAs FASB 159, and they still don't understand it.
Yeah.
So the level of complexity in mortgage finance has accelerated, such that the team of people that are supporting it may not have the foundation to do what needs to be done.
This is also true of servicing. There's
same thing in servicing.
Same thing.
We've got to up the ante. We've got to increase the quality of the staff out there. We can't use bookkeepers. We're talking about. We've got to bring in degreed accountants. We've got to bring in CPAs. They got to get trained in mortgage finance. That's what's going to happen in order for mortgage banks to survive. You can't just have your bookkeeper do it anymore. You're going to need CPAs. And we even work with mortgage companies who hire CPAs who had never worked in mortgage before. And it's like, oh my gosh, what is all this stuff? So just because you're a CPA doesn't mean you're going to step in and know it. It takes 18 months for a good CPA to understand mortgage finance.
They missed the Campus MBA webinar, but hopefully they can download and get it, or you'll be doing it again. But you have you're speaking at another MBA accounting event that's coming up.
Tell our
listeners about that so they can go register for that one. And it's a cool place, a nice place to go.
It is. It's the place where the weather forecast is always the same.
San Diego, California.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be speaking at the accounting and tax conference for MBA nationally.
Good.
And we're going to be talking primarily about M&A and M&A transactions and trailing EBITDA.
M&A is mergers and acquisitions.
Merger and acquisitions and cash flow forecast and cash flow pass and EBITDA, trailing EBITDA, multiple on earnings and all that stuff. But that still is all based in accounting.
Wow.
You got to have good accounting numbers because if you're looking at buying a company or selling a company, you got to know what you've got.
Do you know the dates of that seminar off
it's
the top?
Mid-November.
Mid-November. You can go to the MBA website, folks. Go to mortgagebankers.org, I believe what it is. Jake can correct that. We're going to have him on in just a minute. To make sure you sign up for that seminar. If you missed the Campus MBA webinar, you can get to San Diego, pretty pleasant place to go, and dive deeper into this. Folks, we encourage you to get out to these seminars. It's absolutely essential. They put them on for – and it's not – but they're a moneymaker for the MBA. They're here to train you so that you don't get in trouble. Folks, there is some serious stuff out there if you don't get it right. Andy Schell, Profit Doctor, good.
Well, one quick point on the Campus MBA. It's a great tool to use, and there's hundreds and hundreds and thousands and thousands and thousands of mortgage companies out there. All of them have to deal with this issue. There were 60 people at the webinar. There should have been 600 people at the webinar.
Yeah.
Campus MBA is a great resource, and it's underutilized.
Well, folks, we need to bring that out more and more. It's so good to have you, Andy, bring us an update on
what's going on.
Appreciate it. Folks, we'll be right back because we've got Jay Brinkman coming up. We want to get to that and give him as much time as possible. Folks, Jay Brinkman of the MBA will be talking about the MBA's recommendations about the role of government in the secondary markets and liquidity. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success,
Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging,
financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you back with us. Our special guest, without further ado, is Jay Brinkman. He's the chief economist for the MBA and the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. He's also the senior vice president responsible for research and education. I could go on and on about his background, but most of our listeners know Jay Brinkman very well. He's a highly regarded individual, and one of Jay's fans just happens to be Doug Duncan, chief economist at Fannie Mae, and we left this event, and I was talking to Doug just before we came on, and these two obviously respect each other, and so two economists I enjoy very much, and we've got one of them on here. Jay Brinkman, good to have you on the broadcast.
Dave, thanks so much. It's a pleasure as always.
Always good to have you here. We are talking about the economic report. Let's go over cover a little bit of that. Any commentary on what Joe had to share about that? And then I'd love your thoughts. Anything you want to add to that?
Well, the numbers have clearly been disappointing. The second quarter GDP numbers, as you said, came out low. I think the jobs numbers this Friday are actually going to be a little disappointing. We don't see the strength in the private sector, and I think there are going to be some surprises in terms of the number of teachers that have been hired. That's going to be down. I do have to say, though, the chances of MBA coming out with a diaper index are very low. I have enough people already telling me that my forecasts are full of it. I'd hate to prove them right by coming out with a diaper index. So
diaper
maybe
index.
We can leave the we'll table that for the time being.
We'll table that one. I thought you'd get a chuckle out of that one when we had you muted in the background of that. And I could just see you walking into Mike Frantantoni there and say, hey, Mike, I need to have you start a new index. It's the diaper index. It's certainly we're seeing an aging population that has the dynamics in that. Jay, we're doing a series of broadcasts, as you know, on politics and the mortgage industry, and I always want your perspective. We're going to go down there first, then we're going to get into the MBA's recommendation for the future of government role and really having to do about liquidity in the secondary markets. But I would like to get your comments, first of all, and your about this election. And, you know, we're hearing how everyone has the opinion that's very, very pivotal. It's probably every election they say this is one of the most important elections ever, but certainly economically at least, this is one of the most critical. What are your thoughts that you'd like to share with our listening audience about this election and our two candidates?
Yeah, well, I think this election it shows one of the clearest choices, clearest differences for two different directions with the economy. Romney's been proposing a series of growth-oriented tax policies, getting the growth back in the private sector, and essentially growing the pie to support what we need both here and internationally. And I think on the other side, the incumbent party is looking more toward that the reliance on government needs to provide the growth, that we need to have more of reliance on a safety net, and really sort of the layering on of as many of these programs as they think the economy can support. So people are faced with, gee, do I want to look to the government as my source of support, or do I want to look more for personal initiative and growth? That is the stark choice we have for this election.
I think your word stark choice is so true, and I think it's also there seems to be ideological lines drawn like we've never seen before on social issues, economic issues. Where do you go? I mean, you name whatever topic you have, and everyone has everyone's become ideologues. I can't even get that out, but anyway, have various ideologies, Jay, and we're seeing a real separation. I think it's very telling for our country, and I think it's going to be very interesting as we track this. And I'm assuming you're encouraging every mortgage banker to get out and vote if they have any interest. They want to see our industry survive. That there's some clear choices to that.
They need to get involved. They need to vote. They need to contribute. They need to talk to those who might be undecided. Of course, MBA does not take an official position in endorsing one candidate or the other, but you can log on to websites and see where different executives and others of the MBA where their contributions line up. So it's,
that's exactly right.
Well, I'll throw in a political comment real quick.
Yes.
The bombing of the embassy can't be a terrorist attack because terrorist attacks don't exist under the ideology.
Yeah, ideology.
So therefore, government spending has to work because there can be no other solution.
Well, the prophet doctor always comes up with a unique perspective. I think one of the things we were talking about, Jay, is that was good, Eddie. By the way, I think one of the things that we're talking about is the need for mortgage bankers, Jay, to come to the table. First of all, get to know what the issues are, know what's being discussed, get involved, but then get involved intelligently. And, Jay, there's many of us who are throwing our hands up in the air about our industry's never been more regulated. It's just overburdensome. It's killing our industry. It's going to kill this economy, you know, and all of that. But they're not understanding what is out there that organizations like the MBA have suggested, which is the reason I was so excited to have you on the broadcast. And I want to say again, thank you so much for coming on. The MBA has put forth a document called MBA's Recommendations for the Future Government Role in the Core Secondary Mortgage Market. Jay, this is a really thoughtful document. When was this written, and when did this come out? I think this is over a year old, is it not?
Oh, it's longer than that. We started actually back when Freddie Mac's short-term debt, because there was fear they would not be able to roll over their short-term debt in the Asian markets, the government had to step in and say we will explicitly guarantee that short-term debt for the rollover. We came in then that morning and said, okay, the Rubicon has been crossed. We need to do something in terms of what now will need to be done to replace these entities. And then quite a few months later, when they were put into conservatorship, we were ready to go with a task force of some of the best minds in the industry. And over the next several months, put this document together to offer as a plan for the outline of a plan for how we thought the new secondary market should be put together.
Yeah, Jay, this is there's things I have, you know, I'm on Fox Television a lot, and in the popular conventional thought over there is to say less government. At least some of the guys that I'm on with a lot saying we need government out of everything. This document, I know you contributed to it dramatically, and there's a lot of great minds that went into this. But this document really says is before you say let's get government out of everything, especially the mortgage industry, let's think again. Would you give our listeners a little bit of a history lesson of where the federal government got involved? I think it's just good for backdrop to go, when did the government get involved?
Well, if you go back to the Great Depression,
right,
and the issues of first there was the creation of FHA to secure this radical new mortgage product that was being discussed, this 30-year fully amortizing mortgage. Who in the world would want to take on the risk of a 30-year fixed rate mortgage so that FHA stood in to support that, but also the case where mortgage funding was largely dependent upon local institutions and their having the balance sheet capacity to fund mortgages, and as some would simply run out of money, to provide a method for buying these mortgages off the balance sheets of banks and thrifts, giving them the money so they can turn around and make more. That system was in place until roughly 1967, I think it was, when Lyndon Johnson ran into a problem in getting a debt ceiling vote out of the Senate, and he had to twist a lot of arms and said, I'm never doing that again. What do we need to do? And someone said, well, if you take Fannie Mae off the government's books, we won't have to count them as part of the federal debt. So he said, okay, do it. So they put together a law said, okay, Fannie Mae, you're converting over to being a private company. Have at it and achieve Lyndon Johnson's main goal, which was to get him off the books so he could continue to fund the war and the Great Society programs. That's then when Fannie evolved. There was not a whole lot of thinking as to, is this the proper structure? Do we have adequate controls for competition? Freddie Mac then came along originally as a co-op with the thrifts to provide some degree of competition, but it was clear that there were problems with the structure going back some time, and people have been arguing, thinking about if we could design a system from scratch, would it really look like what we had? The conservatorship, the problems we've seen definitely provide us with that opportunity, and that's why MBA put together this plan.
Well, and first of all, I think what's really interesting, a lot of people say Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have always been, you know, on these GSEs, private quasi. No, they weren't, folks. They were part of the federal government. They started there. They started inside of that the federal government, and then it was a result of needing to get them out was to help the budgetary issues that Lyndon Johnson was having. So just because they've been private for the last since 1967 does not mean they haven't been. Jay, so we now have them back at the federal government. We're here, and there's a whole lot of political discussion around should we keep them as they are. And the fact that the MBA was forward-thinking enough to create a document and a recommendation, think through this issue, is really right, a testimony to the forward-thinking of what goes on at the MBA. Let's get into this document. Tell us a little bit about what was the recommendation. Give us an overview summary of what this recommendation is and how it differs from Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac as we know it today.
Here is the key element of our recommendation. Banks, if you think of a balance sheet where a bank makes a loan, whether it's any kind of loan, including a mortgage, that loan is then funded with deposits, with debt, and with equity. What they found going into with the Depression was that with the Federal Reserve providing support in terms of the discount window and that was not sufficient to prevent the sort of irrational runs on banks, panic wanting to withdraw deposits, and banks failing because of these runs. When we look at a securitization model where we fund loans with securities, what we have learned is that the securities are subject to these same type of panic runs, panic selling, and particularly in a day of having to take mark-to-market write-downs on your securities portfolio, who is going to want to hold these things if suddenly the market could be spooked by rumors or whatever else, so that there is a role for the federal government to provide the support and ultimate liquidity support, not necessarily coming in at the front end of any of the credit support, because what we wanted to do was to say there should be private capital at risk, there should be private capital that provides innovation, different types of business models. So that was what we were trying to do with the plan. And simply put, the way we want to set it up is that, of course, the origination structure would stay as it is. So a combination of independent mortgage companies, community banks, credit unions, large banks, whoever is in the market out there, to have open access for all of these institutions as they desire to get into the secondary market. But we would create a series of privately funded, privately capitalized credit guarantor entities. We refer to them in our plan as mortgage credit guarantor entities, or MCGs. Have not yet been sued by McDonald's, but I think it's largely because how we spell it. But these MCGs essentially would be monoline, individually capitalized, standalone companies, not unlike a mortgage insurance company now, that would provide loan-level guarantees for loans being sold into securities. A key difference from the current model in what Fannie and Freddie do is that there would be open competition. There would be open chartering. So if someone came in and said, I have a better idea, for example, of providing support for smaller mortgage lenders, or I have a better idea in terms of shared recourse, I have a better idea in terms of how we're going to handle this type of servicing, those ideas can be put forward and tested in the market, as opposed to being a supplicant to Fannie or Freddie and saying, would you please consider this idea? If they say no, well, then we put together some money and come in and try and get a charter and go into competition. So that is what we're trying to do with this. Another key point is that some people say, oh, well, Jay, your plan is just it's going to turn some of the big institutions, Wells Fargo or Goldman Sachs, whoever, they will then take over the secondary market. My answer is no. What we are proposing are monoline, separately capitalized. If they are part of a bigger institution, they have to be bankruptcy remote. They have to be totally separate from the institution. Quite frankly, I don't think the economics would support Goldman or Wells or someone like coming into it under our plan. So in many ways, the structure would be similar to a mortgage insurance company, would work on the market discipline. And then we could talk about where the government fits into this.
Yeah, you know, Andy was actually, we were talking about that. Andy was saying that very same thing. This just has a similarity of mortgage insurance. Joe, we're going to come to you in just a minute.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, it really does have an aspect of that. And we were reading this and commenting about before the broadcast. Joe, go ahead and jump in. You've got something.
Well, I was going to ask, do you see the mortgage insurance companies as becoming a MACG?
They could very easily make that conversion. In fact, I had a hallway conversation with one of the CEOs of MI company still around, and I said to him, I said, make sure you look at my plan. I'm trying to turn you into a GSE. And he says, well, you know, don't do me any more favors like that, seeing what's happening with the ones there. But seriously, I think this type of entity providing support, not limited to any particular LTV, the big difference, though, is we will have a government backstop behind that insurance that doesn't currently exist with the MI industry.
That's good.
That government back. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
The government backstop would be really in two forms. First of all, we would set up an insurance fund, very much like the FDIC insurance fund, where premiums would be paid into it over time, and that were one of these MCGs, one of these credit entities to fail, the securities then would be supported by funds out of this insurance fund. And it would only be if that fund then ran out of money, the government then would be the ultimate backstop coming in behind it. But we think the combination of the private capital and the MCGs, the oversight, the discipline that would be associated with that, the insurance fund, and then finally the government would provide the liquidity support we need without having a big reduction in market discipline that we would see with the pure government guarantee program.
Well, I can just almost anticipate, Jay, some of the resistance. I mean, so many people are saying, we don't want the government guaranteeing anything more. So, Andy Schell, you're the stress tester. You do a lot of stress testing on different models of thought. So
I think it's a very short-sighted perspective to one say that the government has no role of anything because
I agree.
What do we do about roads, bridges, and bombs?
Yeah.
But, you know.
Roads, bridges,
okay, good. But, you know, Jay, when you were describing the program, the thing that came to my mind, and you to a substantial degree just answered it, but the question that came to my mind is, how do you think this new structure would be stress-tested? Let's run some fat tails out there, and let's have 2008, 9, and 10 again. With this model in place, had this model been in place for 20 years and we get to 2007, 8, 9, 10, how do you think it would have fared?
It would have depended upon the exposure of the individual MCGs to particular growth markets. I have said over and over that it was California and Florida that destroyed the world economy, that absent the experience there, I think we could have survived the rest of it. Okay, but one of the lessons that has come out of this, now whether the industry has learned this or anyone else who sets this up, is we have to look at the macroeconomic factors then that drive credit risk. We can't just simply look backwards and say, gee, if we do this LTV with this credit score, with this whatever, how many late pays in the last 2 years, okay, we'll make them a loan. You also then have to look at the macro factors. What is the overbuilding? What is the concentration of credit risk in a particular market? How dependent are they on this? And I guess I would have hoped that with more companies in it, someone would have realized that a little bit more upfront with some of the bigger problem markets. But any system is dependent upon the intelligence and the ability of the people in it, where you clearly have the private capital at risk here, I would hope that would help us address the future problems.
Hey, Jay?
I think go ahead, Joe. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was gonna ask. One of the benefits that comes with central government involvement has been the consistency in procedure and policy and documentation. The FANI standard. Do you have a mechanism to retain the benefits of having that standard in this McG government guarantee program?
The McGs would be regulated. As part of that regulation, we're anticipating standard types of mortgages going into this standard reporting. And that's one of the reasons we've been looking with a great deal of interest in what FHFA has been proposing in terms of a back-end, a single security platform. That I think that's very important because that allows competition to come in without having to build all the back-end
Right.
Structure, requirements that was the FANI standard. Now it becomes this sort of industry utility standard that you have to meet that in order to deliver securities loans into this new platform.
That's a good point.
And issue. So I think it's going to be taken care of that way.
Good.
One of the things that we go into the political season, and really what people are saying is we don't want to put any more tax dollars into any too big to fail programs. And this is a privately owned monoline institutions, these McGees that you're suggesting, that the MBA is suggesting. I really like this whole idea, and I want every listener out there, mortgage professional, to take the time to digest this and be able to use it as a talking point. That's one of the reasons we're putting Jay on the broadcast. We're discussing it like we are. But, Jay, how is this insulated from a too-big-to-fail model, and could tax dollars find their way into backing this?
Well, tax dollars could, and what I would hope would be that the tax dollars would find their way into it only in the event of a major, major recession, but that this would not be the cause of that recession. And that would be,
yeah.
I would hope that none of these institutions would be such that they were too big to fail. None of these institutions would be so big that another one then couldn't take over their book in the case that it did fail. So that, I think, is the key difference, rather than having the concentration that we saw in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac that did pose major risk just because of the size of their balance sheets and the amount that was out there. Absolutely, if there is that possibility, but I think there are ways of dealing with the market discipline that's associated with it, and particularly if we have this insurance fund that would stand in front of the government guarantee
right.
that we've never had before. What we're going to do with this is the only thing that's going to be guaranteed will be the securities.
Will be the important distinction. But listeners, get this. Go ahead.
We were guaranteeing the entire entity.
Yes.
And we weren't being paid for it. There was an implicit guarantee for anything and everything they did. So it was the securities, the debt, et cetera. Under this, it is only the securities, no equity, no other debt issuance. None of that will be guaranteed by this. And so we make it explicit what's guaranteed, and we make it explicitly paid for.
Also, what's going to go into this is what products are allowable to go into these McGees. Talk about that.
We are anticipating, and my guess is this will be then tied into whatever definition we end up with a qualified mortgage. That's factoring into this, which QMs were not on the horizon when we first put the plan together, but we anticipated that there would be a box within which we would have a mortgage that you can deliver so that it would be fully documented, some limit on what the lower end of credit as to what you could deliver into it, et cetera. You probably would have to have some sort of tranching in terms of loan size to deal with TBA and other issues for pricing purposes, but you would have a standardized product. What you would not necessarily have, though, is standardized service and pricing to the originators, that's where the competition would take place among these McGees.
Hey, Jay, it's Andy. Quick thought. You were mentioning previously about there's more to lending than just the individual borrowers, FICO and LTV. It's also about the macro perspective, the macroeconomic impact. And so when you're in a market that's appreciating 30% a year, maybe it's time to maybe not lend so much in that market. So if that's what I heard you say, and it kind of sounds like that if you had a market that was overbuilt, you would back off lending or raise rates, do something to limit that. If that's the case and you do that, because that makes sense economically to protect the risk in the insurance fund, what happens when the government comes in and says, no, you will lend?
Yeah.
Well, that is a problem, and that is a problem that we've been having with some of the other sort of traditional housing groups in Washington. Is it a different way of putting it? They're saying, well, you've got to be in all markets at all times to fully support those markets, and you also then have to be subject to some form of housing goals. We have pushed back very strongly on that to say all of the problems with poor incentives that have been caused in the past or that could lead to overinvestment in overheated markets, particularly for support of non-owner-occupied structures and speculation. You can't expect these institutions to get in there. There's a role for that, but that's private capital, either in private funds or if a bank wants to take on that risk. But that's not what this structure should be for.
Right. And Jay, that's got to be the primary deterrent to bringing private capital to this. Mm-hmm. The idea that the government can, at a whim, change your whole process, change your whole future.
I was in a meeting at Treasury probably 6 months ago, a year ago now. I can't really remember. As they said, time flies. But when they said they were really going through talking about they were trying to decide, again, what the role of government should be. Should it be in there at all? Should it be strictly privatized? And I told them flat out, there are two decisions you have to make, the degree of government support and the housing goals, the expectation of what burdens you're then going to put on these institutions to carry out some sort of social policy that's really exogenous to the running of a safe and sound institution with the structure. And the two go hand in hand. You can't separate them.
Well, you talk about that, and then yet in this proposal, you talk about how there needs to be a regulator, and I agree with you. So how do you strike that balance? And what should this regulator be? What should they look like? And give us some insights to what this recommendation says.
The recommendation says that the McGees will have a regulator that looks at what is the risk they're taking on, are they adequately capitalized, do they have internal controls, and essentially says, based on that, we will allow you to continue. We think it needs to be an OCC-type regulator in Treasury because for these securities – to have the credibility to trade around the world and to bring capital into the housing market, it really has to be seen that we've got a credible regulator in there who knows what it's doing in terms of assessing risk and running the proper stress tests, et cetera.
We've got to get you back because we're not going to get all this covered this week, but I want to talk basically explain how this is basically a federal government guarantee, a wrap. It's a wrap of the security, and I think it's really important as we start getting our listeners and our mortgage professional community getting ready to engage politicians on this. I want each of our listeners to be equipped, Jay, with an understanding of what this is, but what it is also is not. And so let's get into explaining and to our listeners that this is a wrap of the security. Could you expound on that in a way that our listeners might be able to take and re-articulate to in the ears of others?
Absolutely. What we're saying is we are not putting the guarantee on every single loan. The government's not stepping in and saying, okay, I'm going to guarantee this loan or that one. That is going to be the role of a private entity as they buy loans from originators, put them together as a security, and have a fund, an insurance fund, backing their guarantee. But then behind it, in exchange for a fee, there will be a government wrap that says, yes, we have blessed these securities. We've looked at the risk. We're willing to put the ultimate credit of the United States behind where these are. But it is strictly that. It is strictly a wrap. It is not a primary credit decision. It is not primary credit pricing. It is strictly a wrap. at the back end on the securities. So if you think about who would have to fail, it would have to be the credit guarantor, it would have to be the insurance fund, and the borrower.
So there's sort of three levels
of payment.
Some people are going to say, this sounds a lot like a Ginnie Mae security. How is this different and how is it similar?
Well, in a sense of a Ginnie Mae wrap being behind it, it's similar, but the fundamental difference is we're looking at private entities to provide the credit insurance, not FHA, and I think that's a crucial difference here between what Ginnie does in sense. Well, Ginnie doesn't really have to worry about the FHA credit. They're looking at servicers' ability to meet their requirements. If for any reason they then don't run into a problem with the FHA insurance. But Ginnie is not running its own actuarial studies on FHA. In this case, though, they would be paying close attention to what's the credit appetite, what's the concentration risk, what else are they doing in terms of trying to be successful with this program. That is going to be the role, and it's not a role that Ginnie plays today.
Jay, does this change anything about servicing?
Oh, good point.
We don't anticipate that it would. In fact, I think we would be looking more at servicing operating under the standards that are being proposed. There may be a difference in terms of what you might want to do with default servicing, the servicing contracts then associated with how individual lenders sell loans. And it may be a competitive point then going forward, but I think the general standards that we're seeing will continue to apply.
One of the things I want to get into, Jay, we're looking at the clock here, and we're just ticking away here right out of time. I want to get into, I'd like to have you back next week. You've agreed to do that. I want to say thank you so much. And listeners, you can email us your questions. In fact, if you want to, you can call my phone number, leave a voicemail message. If you want to do that, we'll play your voicemail message next week so Jay can literally hear you framing up the question. You can dial my direct line number, 512-501-2810, 512-501-2810. Leave a voicemail message and say, Dave, ask Jay this question. Or you just, when you're recording the message, just say, Jay, this is a question for Jay Brinkman on the radio. Jay, what about, and then articulate your question, state your question. It'd be good to have Jay back on next week. We're going to talk next week about this transition because we've got a existing system that's moving down the track really well. Jay uses the analogy of two trains moving down the track. One is headed off a cliff, headed into some type of demise, political maybe, and the other one is what this one could be is, and how do we move from one to the other? So it's transferring a system from a moving train onto another one as one heads maybe off a political cliff. We're going to be really excited to have you back next week, Jay, to really begin to get into some of these issues. But just to kind of tease that segment up for next week, how do we do that?
Well, here is something I actually said that is at a Chicago Banking Structure Conference a few years ago, which is it's kind of like being on the Grand Canyon and looking out over the big expanse, and you look way over on the other rim and say, gee, I'd really like to be there. Well, one argument is, well, you know, we're not going to get there. It's way too complicated. Let's just stay where we are and try and make the best of what we've got. I don't think that's a solution. Then again, there are others in town that say, we don't need a government guarantee. We want to be over there. Maybe if we get a good running start, we'll be able to clear. I don't think that ends well either. What we've got to do is pick out where we want to be, and it's going to be a very complicated sort of torturous path to make a lot of decisions, things we don't anticipate right now, but we'll get there.
I use the transition. You use the Grand Canyon. It's clear skies. You can see the other side. I think it's more like trying to make a leap across the Niagara Falls. And you can't see the other side because of all the mist and all the froth that's going on. Jay Brinkman, we're going to have you back next week. Thank you so much. Our special guest this week has been Jay Brinkman, the chief economist for MBA. He's also the senior vice president of research and education. What a great guest. Thank you so much, Jay, for being brought with us. We look forward to having you back next week. Folks, that's it for the program. Tell others about it. Get others tuned in. We want you back. Thank you so much for tuning in. Look forward to having you back next week.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.